97.7 FM, your community radio station. Up next, it's Radio to Women. And don't touch that dial, ladies, because it's a show can't afford to miss. It's Radio to Women every Thursday at 1 p.m. and Tuesdays at 4 p.m. And guess what? Get our podcasts at Radio2Women.com. And this is Radio to Women. I'm Serene Mastriani here with Bill Short, founder and president of The Short List. The Short List is a college counseling, really college and career counseling organization that inspires passion in young adults to assist them in securing their spot on the short list for college, graduate programs, and professions. Bill received his MBA from Harvard, his BA from Villanova. I always love to say you were on the short list.
I was on the short list.
On the receiving side of the short list. And his college counseling degree from the University of California in LA. 2016 is a complicated time for students that are going into this process. I know you've mentioned it on, you know, various levels in the past, but I really want to hone in on kind of what's changing in 2016 and what students should be aware of the change.
Absolutely. Well, one of the things that I think that all students and families probably are most concerned about is this new application season. You know, what do we do with these applications? Because, of course, college admissions, the application process has completely changed. You know, we've been so used to a common application that has existed since 1970. This year, a rival application, the first time ever in the history of you know, college application admissions since the 70s, has a rival really been introduced. And it's radically different. And then, of course, there are some schools that don't subscribe to either of them that have their own school application. And then there are kind of coalition applications that are outside of the coalition application that's been introduced. So how confusing is that?
And that's the rival application you're talking about.
Well, the coalition application, right. Yeah, the coalition platform. But there are coalition applications such as the University of California, where you use a separate application that's just for the University of California schools. So you have all of those schools that belong to an entirely different application. And so I think for a lot of families, that's the confusion. What do we do?
Right. You know? So what... Let's just talk about strategies right from the beginning. So I'm a senior. I've kind of narrowed my list down, maybe, to, you know, how many? Do you have a golden number for people?
I always say that if you've done your proper research, hopefully you've done some visiting if you're a senior, if you're going out, you know, you've done that either in the spring or the summer, but certainly by the fall, you should have probably your list of schools. And if you've done your research properly, I'm going to say that you should have anywhere from 8 to maybe 12 schools.
Mm-hmm. 12 is a max.
12, first of all, I mean, do you have any idea how much a college application is? How much it costs just to apply?
Is it expensive?
It is. It is. It can be anywhere.
It used to be $20, I think, when I was applying.
Okay. Now we're starting to date ourselves here. It is anywhere from $50 to $100.
Okay. So 12 would be $1,200 right out the door.
Yeah. Do you have $1,200 that you just want to because I want to hear that I got into that school?
Throw away.
Yeah. Maybe you save that for something else. Maybe there's a family vacation coming up, right? So if you've done the proper research, I think that probably a balance of 8 to 12.
Mm-hmm.
I always say the magical number for me is 10.
Mm.
And it's because it's very divisible in a formula that I'm going to give you.
Okay.
So what you want to do is you want to have that many because you want to balance your list.
Mm.
Okay? And you can go lower than that or higher, but think about this. You would have probably three categories of schools. You would have a school that's called a reach school.
Mm.
It's called a reach for a couple of reasons. Either you don't meet their qualifications. You just simply don't have their test scores or their GPA averages, and it's, you know, it's a reach. Or it's among the most desirable schools in the country, and that's a reach for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
A reach school is different for every single student. There is one student who has a 4.0 who is certainly qualified perhaps to apply to Ivy Leagues, and those would be reaches. Somebody else with a C-plus average, that wouldn't be their reach. Their reach would be a different level of school,
mm-hmm.
but they would have their reaches as well.
Right. So everybody really pretty much has that reach.
Has a reach.
Right. And Nicolina, Georgetown.
Michelina.
She's been wanting to go there since she's been a little kid.
Yes. So maybe it is, but we'd have to kind of look. I'd have to see what her GPA and her test scores are to see if it is. But probably because Georgetown is among the most desired schools in the country. So even with a 4.0 and a 20, you know, 400 in the old SAT or 1600 in the new, probably a reach for most students.
Right.
Doesn't mean you don't get in. It just means, look, everybody wants this school.
And you want to have three of those.
You want to have three of those because it's a 30% chance or less that you're going to get in. So I would say 30% of that list, magical number of 10, that's three schools, 30%. Your target schools are, those are the magical schools. Those are the ones where you have essentially what they're looking for. Mm. You walk onto that campus and you look around. My gosh, these kids, they all had my high school GPA. They all had my test scores. Mm. They all were able to balance the kind of, you know, in-school, out-of-school activities, and to achieve those kind of scores and GPAs, these are my people. This is my target. But because there could be other students applying from your school, because you decided to apply maybe, you know, regular decision and maybe early decisions when they took the students from your school, or for a host of other reasons that are out of your control, we always say it's 50-50. Looking good, but maybe there's a chance you won't get in because of some external factor that you have no control over. 50% of your list, five schools.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So you've got that. You've got five schools in there. You've got three that are the reach.
Right.
And then what? And two. I'm thinking two safety schools.
We never call them safety, and I'll tell you why. Unless you're applying to a community college, there is no school in this country that doesn't have some form of selectivity. Okay. A community college, as long as you have a high school diploma or perhaps a GED equivalent, you could go down to, you know, the community college,
and
show them that, and enroll and start your classes that day. Every other school is going to have some form of selectivity. And so we always say, oh, your scores and GPA and everything clearly shows that you're a strong, strong candidate here. It's probably 80% chance or greater that you're going to get in. That 20% difference is the two schools.
Gotcha.
But I'll tell you something interesting that we tell all of our students, and that is, don't just apply to the school because I'll get in. Because if it's the only school that you get into,
you're not going to be happy.
You're probably not going to be happy if it was one of those schools. Well, I was never going to go to that school.
Right, right, right. And that just happened to one of Michelina's friends. That's exactly what happened. He had two, you don't want to call them safety schools, but he had two schools in that bucket.
Probables.
And those are the only probables. And they were the only schools he got into. And he had no intention of really going to either one of them.
Right.
So you're stuck. Because
you're stuck, because
right.
That's kind of it.
And I want to talk a little, I just want to shift a little bit on where you're stuck.
Yeah.
Because the application process, really, for most seniors, let's talk about the seniors now that are going into the process.
Yeah.
They ideally, they're working on it through the summer and they're kind of getting it ready, and it's the drop dead date on early action, early admission is sometime in the fall, right?
That's right, November 1.
November 1st. And then the other is March.
It's actually January 1, but they'll find out in March.
Oh, okay.
So January 1.
So that's what I'm asking you. So let's just say that somebody doesn't have the fortune of spending time with someone like you and does what Michelina's friend did and is stuck in March, finding out they only got into the two schools they didn't want to.
Right.
Is there really no turning, there's no turning it around? There's no trying, okay.
Wondering what does that person with two schools do in March?
Right. They have to go to one of the two schools. They can't reapply to some other.
They can't reapply if they've been denied. No, they have to sit out a year. You know, but not at that point, it's not technically a year. It would just be until this fall. So
right.
If they heard in March of last year, April of last year, this past spring, that they didn't get in, well, they could reapply. But they're sitting out.
Well, what about the schools they didn't throw in there that they might have been interested in?
Exactly. So what you can do is, NACAC, which is the National Association of College Admissions Counseling, has a list of schools on that site. And on that site, they will say, schools still accepting applications.
I gotcha. Okay. So you're limited to whatever's on that site.
Many of those schools could be, they're going to probably be less selective. It's just by nature still accepting applications, but not necessarily bad schools. So let me give you an example. You'd mentioned your daughter's friend who gets into two schools. Not real happy with those two schools. You know, we would have advised differently. We would have made sure that those two probable schools, those safeties, probables as we call them, would have been schools that you would have been happy with. And maybe even have gone to over another school that you might have gotten into. We had a student this past year who, for her, the probable school, it was for her, it's different for every student, was a school that she had there as kind of that safety net, right, that probable. She did get in. She got into many other schools, too, several that were more selective. Seemed like it was going to be obvious she was going to go with one of those schools. The interesting thing was that that probable school offered her a presidential scholarship, and they offered her a spot in the Honors College. And she looked at that and said, wait a minute, half my education is going to be paid? And I'm in the Honors College, so I'm one of very few. And this is a reputable school that if I'm applying to graduate schools, this has some, you know, has some some name recognition. Why wouldn't I go to this school?
That sounds like a really smart kid.
It is what she did. It doesn't always happen, but that's what she did. But that's the kind of probable that you want on your list. You say, I would be proud to go.
I'd be happy. And I think that's one of the gifts of, I think, having someone to work with, whether it's somebody at the high school or somebody like yourself, that's really going to give that kind of good advice.
Well, we hope so. We certainly, I mean, we spend our lives doing that, is to research these schools. I've just come off of a two-week college tour, you know, the Northeast. And it's funny because I go back to these schools again, and I meet these college admissions officers, and I had one of our clients say to me, you know, Bill, I mean, do you ever hear anything new? And I go, you wouldn't believe how much new I hear every time, because schools are always changing for the times. They realize to remain competitive, they have to have new offerings, new courses, new majors. I always hear something new. So absolutely.
Yeah, and I think, too, that that brings us back to what's new this year. So let's say that we have the 10 schools.
Yes.
Students narrowed it down. They're a senior. I want to focus on seniors now because they're going into this process. And they, all of the schools, all of the 10 schools, participate in both the Common App and the new Rival App. Would that even be the case?
No, probably not. And the reason that it's probably not, just to give you an idea, in 1970, oh my gosh, there were under 100 Common App schools. It was very small. This past year, there were 643. It included all the big names that everybody knows, the Ivies, the Stanfords, the Dukes, you know, many of the, you know, public universities, the University of Massachusetts, the University of Connecticut, you know, many of the state universities of New York, I mean, this area, but throughout the country, all these wonderful schools. 90 plus of them have joined what is called the Coalition Platform. And so there are still many schools that did not join that remain with the Common App. So your question,
so 500 and something are still at the Common App.
Exactly.
And just to orient people that are unaware, so the Common App is one application online with a limited amount of information that you're providing.
Yes.
So because it's been watered down, I imagine, since you've gone from 190 schools to 600 schools.
Yes.
I'm thinking you're going to, you must be limited by text on everything.
It has changed, and that's been the frustration, and that's actually been the impetus for the Coalition Platform, which I can talk about a little bit later, but I can tell you that the Common Application, the challenges that they had was, when it first came out, it was so robust. You know, you could go in there and you could sign up for this application, and you put down all of the information you'd expect, name, address, phone number, list of courses, school, all of that, and then you got to the personal section. And you could list your activities, and you had lots of room to list as many activities and really describe them, your role within that activity, and, you know, maybe there was a championship, or maybe there was special awards or recognition within them, all of that. They then offered you a second part where you could take one of those or a few of those and say the most meaningful and write an essay about that. And so here's a student who's committed their entire high school experience to yearbook. Now you can really talk about passionately why this yearbook was so meaningful to you. And then lastly, you had a section that you could upload a resume, and you could bring that up and, you know, shine some light on those activities that were important. And you even had an additional information section if you wanted to add more. As the Common App grew, they took more and more of that away.
They've stripped it down.
They have.
That's the biggest complaint I hear from parents.
It is.
Is that it's a stripped down application.
Yes.
And my child didn't get into this school because they were really limited by that Common App.
Absolutely. And
that's, that problem will still exist for these students that are, because the Coalition App just isn't ready for prime time yet, it sounds like.
It is and it isn't, okay? There are a lot of glitches, okay? So before we get to that, let me just finish with the comment. I have to say, you know, the challenges that these students have. You have this Common App that has been stripped down, that you no longer have that essay, the activity essay, you no longer have that upload function, you're limited on the number of activities, and so the coalition, as you're referring to, has come out and said 90-plus schools were fed up with this. We want to form our own application, which is this wonderful platform. And there are some glitches. Like with anything, it's the beta test. This is the year. And so all of them are remaining, except for, I think, three schools, the University of Washington in Seattle, the University of Florida, and the third one that is kind of up in the air is Maryland, the University of Maryland, because there's some talk that some of those Maryland coalition, there's a group of Maryland schools, may still be with the Common App.
Mm-hmm.
So what you have is you have these three schools. Other than that, you have, 87 schools that are saying, okay, we'll be with this new coalition platform / application, but you know what? We're going to keep our foot in the Common App as well. Students, seniors, you decide which one.
And could you, so that, I guess that's logistically my question, since it's confusing for parents. Can they decide, can they put them in both?
No.
Okay.
You can only submit one application per school.
Okay, so you have to choose which one you're submitting. So what? Give me a college that has both the coalition and the Common App.
Sure. So coalition and the Common App. Okay, we know that all the Ivies are involved.
Okay, so Harvard, for instance.
Harvard. You could go with the coalition, or you could go with the Common App.
And so if that's one of your schools, like if you look and you see that, and that's one of your 10, would you recommend the coalition over the Common as a college counselor?
For a senior, probably not.
Mm.
Probably not, and I'll tell you why. You're going to have schools that do not participate in the coalition application this year because it's only 90 schools, 643 sitting out on that other, Common application that, 90 of them are gone or split now, but the others are all staying over here with the Common application.
Right. But you can't have, so I guess my question is, as a student,
yes.
Let's say I go, I put all my stuff into the Common App.
Yes.
I put all my stuff into the Coalition App.
Yes.
Can't I cherry pick at that point?
You can. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
It's a lot of work to do both of them. So I would say to seniors, unless you have an exclusive coalition application, or unless the majority of your schools are on the Common App, are on the, I'm sorry, coalition platform, and are active this year, because they could be members. So there's 90 plus that have joined it, but only 40 or 50 that are actually going to make it available this year.
Yeah, so that's confusing too. How do you even find that out?
You have to go to the coalition platform, Coalition for College Access, and you'll see it in there, and they'll tell you who's active.
Okay.
So
unless you have out of the 10 schools, 7 that are on the coalition, other than that, you wouldn't even be bothering with it.
I don't know that I would. And that's a shame, because let me share with you a little bit about the coalition platform.
Right. Because I think for juniors,
yes,
this is going to be a game changer.
It will be this will be the game changer.
Right. So if you are parenting a junior like I am,
yes,
this will be a game changer.
This will be the game changer, not a game changer. This will be the game changer, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. And so for seniors, I would say I don't know if it's worth all that effort to go through and to change it yet. You'd have to really look at it. But I will tell you that coalition platform is robust and it's beautiful. And it will allow you to show all your colors.
Mm-hmm.
You'll really be able to present yourself in a fully, actualized way that the Common App, has really taken away.
Right. And the Coalition App is, you've described it before as like a virtual locker.
Yes.
Where you can just put things in as a student, and juniors should start this, I'm assuming, right at the beginning of school year.
They can. Now, they can actually start, don't go running for the rafters here, okay, getting scared, but you can start as early as starting your freshman year. You can sign up for one of these.
Mm-hmm.
So what is the coalition application? It's really a platform. The application is part of it. And so the first part is a profile. So you can set up your profile, name, address, phone number, and there's several, areas that you cover that are your basic, kind of who you are sections. there is then a locker that you're referring to. And the locker is, imagine kind of a Dropbox on your computer.
Mm-hmm.
Or imagine a folder in your filing cabinet. Or imagine, you know, mom, dad, you know, keeps a folder somewhere in the house of all, you know, Junior or Missy's information that they think might be helpful someday. The coalition platform through this locker will allow you to store that so you don't lose it. One of the complaints that we have is schools don't encourage, high schools don't encourage kids necessarily to save their best quality work.
Mm.
And so depending upon when we start with our students, we may start with a student junior year, senior year. They get to an application, this supplement for that school says, okay, send us a graded paper, an analytical paper with the teacher's comments to grade on it, send that to us. And they say, that was my sophomore year paper in whatever history class. Great, why don't you bring that one? Oh, that's the problem, I didn't save that one.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay, well, do you have a copy elsewhere? Does your teacher? Well, I don't think the teacher has the comments on there. It's just the electronic version that I sent, but it's not the graded one coming back.
Right.
Now, mom, dad, junior, Missy have the ability to say at the end of sophomore year, at the end of freshman year, at the end of junior year, let's drop this into the locker,
right.
The Dropbox,
the Dropbox.
Mm-hmm.
And that is this coalition application. So the website for that is what?
It's the coalition application is Coalition for College Access.
Coalition for College Access.
Yes.
And this is a question that I had from a parent last week when we were talking about this. Is it also a two-way marketing tool? So, in other words, Michelina goes in, which I'm encouraging her to do, and she starts building her profile. And in her profile, she puts what she wants to study in there, because that may be one of the questions.
Yes.
And all of a sudden, Michelina, in her college email box, because that's, I think somebody recommended you create your own email address just for your college stuff.
We always do, that's right.
Right.
Professional email.
Yeah, professional email. Is all of a sudden all of these colleges that are targeting her because she put down she wanted to study forensic science.
Yes.
Is that the way this works as well?
We don't know because it's just started. Mm. Okay, but what we do know is that the locker portion, you can grant access to your locker, okay, or you can send, actually it's not access to your locker, you can share materials from your locker with various people.
Mm.
Your high school counselor. You can share it with your teachers, if you have an independent college counselor, your parents, your coach, anybody that you feel should be part of that. There's talk that that can also then be shared while it's sitting in the locker with admissions folks. Currently, though, what you can do is that you can request information. So from the locker, you can hit a button that says, sign me up on your mailing list.
Mm.
And when I sign up on, you know, the Williams mailing list, I will now be connected with Williams. They won't be able to see anything in my locker. I have to grant permission for that. But we are now connected. So that might be a way that you're getting emails.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't heard that they're selling the mailing list. So Michelina puts in there that she's interested in forensic science. I don't know, and I'm not certain if that will change, that they are taking this list, forensic science, and selling it to all these college and universities to contact Michelina, who might have forensic science programs.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So
because it's very interesting because Michelina wrote this on her PSATs. I guess there was a section where you could write down what you're interested in. And so she wrote forensic science, which isn't very common, I'm assuming. You know,
right.
Not thousands of kids are writing that down. And we're at a cocktail party, and somebody from one of the schools that just started, like you said, you never learn anything new. Well, they were just starting a forensic school, a forensic science discipline at their undergrad school. And he says, oh, I saw Michelina Mastriani's name on a list.
Sure.
And I was like, how? And he said, oh, we purchased this
exactly
information
right.
because we're trying to start the program.
Yes.
And she'll be the first freshman
yes.
that will be enrolled potentially in our forensic science program.
Yes. Now what they did though, understand that they bought this list and they probably bought certain zip codes.
Right,
and
because
so
it happens to be a school that's close to us.
There's a great example.
Yeah.
So a school that's close and it might be a regional school
mm-hmm.
that pulls regionally. you know. And so here's this wonderful student who's marked on her PSAT forensic science, probably not real popular to mark down, maybe, I don't know, but it would be one that let's, you know, call this list and just get the forensic scientist students.
Mm-hmm.
And then let's see what their zip codes are. And yes, let's send that off. Mm-hmm. But it was interesting that the admissions officer knew the name, because that means that they went even a little bit deeper, which
mm-hmm.
is wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, should she be interested in that school?
Yeah, well, it was just interesting because he was like, I saw the name and I thought, how many Michelina Mastri?
Well, there you go, right? Maybe he recognized it knowing you or who knows.
That
was
the
yes.
regional area. You
yes.
know what I mean? That
absolutely.
Regional area. So I thought that that was in some way interesting, in some way a little scary, which
yeah.
then led to this new conversation about this coalition app. And
right.
If I encourage Michelina to do this, am I opening her up to more of this? Which I don't know if that's good or bad.
I don't think that you are at this point, because I think what's going to happen with that is that you can request the information, but I don't think that it's going to necessarily be distributed in the way that kind of scares you,
mm-hmm.
you know, to say, oh my gosh, you know, now they're going to have all of her information. What happens with a lot of students, and we've heard this, because for some of the younger students, the juniors, the sophomores, the freshmen, the rising ones, some of the families say, oh, we're going to hold off actually signing up for that because we think Michelina can improve her grades.
Mm-hmm.
Or we think that, you know, that was her PSAT results. We think her SAT with proper prep and all will be a bit stronger. We're not ready to share that. And so we're trying to ease your concerns to say, wait a minute, no. She would literally have to grant permission for them to go in to see this.
I gotcha. So there's really no downside to it, it sounds like.
There's no downside unless you're duplicating the efforts. And so your question about the seniors was,
right.
you know, which one do they go for? Do they go for the Common App or the Coalition? Coalition does have some kinks. It's why many of the schools that are members are saying, not this year, though,
mm-hmm.
because they want to see those kinks worked out.
Mm.
Others have fully committed. But yes, that platform, which has the profile, which then has that locker, and then has that collaboration tool that you can share it with, again, your counselor, your teachers, your coaches, your parents, your
mm-hmm.
independent college counselor, your, you know, minister, anybody that you want, you have that ability, but you'd have to designate them. And you can also request information in that part of the platform.
And I imagine it would be good to get feedback, like you were saying, on certain, you know, to get feedback from some of these individuals on certain aspects of things, you know what I mean, depending on the discipline of study.
Yes.
Which is another, you know, I think for rising juniors, sophomores, freshmen, juniors, the coalition will be a game changer because it's going to help colleges match better.
Yes.
Is that right? That's like the whole goal?
It is, because think about it. The Common Application not only doesn't offer you a locker, it's saying, don't even give us the information.
Right. We're going to limit what you're
We're
going
to limit. We're going to take where you could have endless activities, and we're going to tell you you can only have 8.
Well, because they have to water it down because it's, you know, like you said, 600 schools and everyone was looking for a little bit something different.
Yeah.
Do you think that the Common App in that watering down has affected that last year, for instance, which was such a low rate of what application success, or how would you quantify that? I mean, articles all over about how Harvard and Yale and Stanford, I mean, Stanford was an extreme example, right, where they
yes.
took practically no one
right.
into their freshman class.
Right.
And their acceptance rates were so low.
They were low. They dropped below 5%, a little unheard of. You know, there was a New York Times columnist who even did a, you know, kind of a mock, you know, column saying, you know, Stanford has reached zero and people still aren't happy,
mm-hmm.
you know, that, you know, we should even be more competitive than that, you know, so it's gotten a little out of hand, you know, to say how selective can you be. What's driving that are kind of what I would say three things. The first thing that's really driving that competitiveness is the number of students applying to colleges. When I started out in this profession back in 2001, there were about 12 million kids in colleges and universities. 12 million. That was a lot. That was a whole lot. Today, it's double that number.
Mm.
And what it is, it's the baby boomers have had their kids. And those are called the echo boomers. And so all those kids have come of age. And they're all applying to colleges. So just the sheer number of kids applying makes it more competitive.
Mm-hmm.
We thought that would taper. And we thought it would actually kind of wane a bit and we'd see that reduce. But something else happened. You know, the U.S. may have lost its competitive edge in some areas, gained it in other areas, but one area that it has held true to forever and ever is higher education. Everybody wants to come to the United States for college or university. So you have the influx of what we call international applicants. And that's driving that number up.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing just the sheer number of applicants. The second one that's really driving it is the number of schools that kids are applying to. So we talked about the Common App. You know, back in the 70s when you just had, you know, 60, 70, 90 schools, well, that was all you had to choose from. Maybe back in the 70s you were hand typing it, you know, with a typewriter, or maybe you were hand writing it. Today it's different. You can, with this, you know, a stripped down application, you could go ahead and apply to multiple schools.
Mm-hmm.
And so we recommend no more than 10 if you've really balanced that list, and fewer if you've really focused. But there are students that will apply to over 20 schools, knowing they can only go to one school.
Mm-hmm.
Why would you spend that kind of money, let alone that time?
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of brings us to the third thing. And the third thing is schools need those applications. They need them. So what they want is the greatest number of applications that they can get so that they can report to their alumni, to their board of overseers, to their faculty, their current students. We're more popular than ever. 20% rise in our applicant pool. So they want that.
Mm.
But then
so
they,
it's a marketing tool.
It is definitely a marketing tool, because at the end of the day, part of their ranking is their yield, where they want to make the fewest offers with the greatest number of students accepted saying yes back. So that makes them even more selective.
Mm.
So those three areas, you know.
You mean, so in other words, the greatest amount of acceptance back. So you take Harvard, which was, I think, less than 5% this year.
Yes.
Which makes them look really good, because they had maybe 200,000 applications. I'm just using raw numbers.
Sure.
They accepted 5%.
Yes.
And of the 5% that accepted, 98% of them went there.
That's a really high yield. Yeah, and I don't even know if theirs is that high, but my gosh, they are among the highest, if not the highest,
mm-hmm.
along with Stanford, yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, those schools that are the most selective are going to have pretty high yields. And
what is a normal yield? What's a normal year?
50%? Normal yield, believe it or not, schools will offer more than twice the number of seats that they actually have available. Because,
really?
Oh yeah, and it will be even below 50% yield. And it's because kids are applying to 20 schools. They can only go to one, so if all 20 accept them, they're saying no to 19 of them.
Right.
And those schools are trying to figure out, are you really going to come to my school if I accept you?
Mm.
You know, and that's where we see this thing called demonstrated interest.
Yeah, I want to talk about that, because you have, and this, if you're just joining us, I haven't reintroduced you. I've been so mesmerized by what you're saying. We're talking to Bill Short, who is the founder and president of The Short List, which is a college and career counseling company, which he founded in 2001. Is that right?
That's 2001? Correct.
Right after McLean was born. That's how I remember you. See, I've been thinking about this a long time. And I want to talk about that, the stresses, the tips, the things that can help these rising seniors as they're going into this process, and rising juniors as they're thinking about this process of college.
Sure. Yeah.
So you said demonstrated interest. You throw that term out a lot. I've seen that on your brochures. What does that mean, demonstrated interest?
Yeah, demonstrated interest is because yield factors into, decision, you know, into the rankings. It factors into the decision. So what they're trying to figure out in college admissions today is, we have all of these qualified candidates. We could accept all of them, you know, equally. But unfortunately, we only have so many spots.
Mm.
How do we choose Michalina over Judy, over Sue, over, you know, Alice?
Mm-hmm.
Well, which one has really shown us that she's even interested or knowledgeable about our school, or reached out to us? Or so if I'm a school that's unique, I'm going to hope that you've come to see the school to know what you're getting into.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're different from most other schools, you know.
What's an example of a unique school?
Hampshire College.
Hmm.
Hampshire College up in Amherst, Massachusetts. An amazing, amazing school. We're used to going off to college and you have your freshman, sophomore, junior, senior year. Hampshire College doesn't do that. They do it by division, Division 1, 2, and 3. Division 1 is your first year. Division 2 is your second and third year. Division 3 is your last year. And in that last year, what you're doing is you're putting together your Div 3, as they call it, project. You spend an entire year presenting some kind of a study or performance or written piece or something that is essentially like a senior thesis. But you're exploring a big question that you want to answer.
Hmm.
That's very unique. there's, you know, no real grading there. It's all evaluation, real close relationships with professors. Tremendous flexibility because there's no real structure to the curriculum. There's recommendations and things that you have to complete, but it's pretty open versus a Columbia College, you know, down at Columbia University in New York City. They have a core. It's very strict. It's saying not only do you take a classics course, you're going to take this one. Mm-hmm. Not only math, but this math course. And so it's very, very structured. If you're applying to both of those schools, as an independent college counselor, I would have to ask you why.
Because they're so different.
They're so different. Mm. But as an admissions officer for each of those schools, I hope you understand my school. Mm. And the more you can demonstrate that you understand my school, the more I'm going to believe you'll come here. And so how can you do that? Well, you can certainly visit the school. And if you haven't done that for your REACH schools, it's going to be tough. If you haven't done it for your target schools, it could also be tough because they're going to say, well, it does have it, but never even took the time to come visit us. You know, and certainly for the probable schools. So the other is reps are out visiting all the time to high schools, communities.
And these are local reps.
These are local reps, meaning that they are with the university, but they leave the university and travel to your area, and they're going to represent or read the applications in this area. Mm-hmm. So they'll read Michelina's school, all the applications coming from her school to Georgetown. There is a specific rep at Georgetown. Because that rep needs to know her high school mm-hmm. and understand the communities here.
And you should have a relationship with that rep. Are they a decision maker?
They are the decision maker. Now, you don't have to necessarily have a relationship with that rep. Certainly, that's a beautiful thing if that happens, mm-hmm. but many schools are protective of that. But what you should do is, it's no different from, as a family, I would say, buying a house. Don't just put a bid out on 10 houses mm-hmm. without seeing them, without researching them. Without exploring them. You know, we go into a house and it sounds good on a piece of paper, but we go in and they've advertised that it's 3 bathrooms, and suddenly we see, well, it's actually not 3 bathrooms. I don't know why this is called a bathroom because it's really just a powder room.
Right.
But you sold it as 3 bathrooms, and, mm-hmm. you know, this one, it's just its awkward position. Mm-hmm. You know, anything that would change your mind about mm-hmm. that house. Same with a school. You go visit a school, you might have a change of thought or opinion about that school.
And the investment is the same, really, if you think about it.
Oh, my gosh. Can you? Yes.
I feel like I'm buying a couple of houses.
You are. And good luck, because it is expensive. Yes.
Right, yeah. It is. And so you want to get it right, I think. So
yes.
There's a couple other things that you have for tips.
Yes.
What are your demonstrated interest is one of them.
Certainly. That
visiting, connecting, building a relationship with
yeah.
who you can on that campus.
Yeah, I call it the research period. Yeah, that's all your research period.
And what's another tip?
The other tip that I would say is you're never going to get around this. The thing that they're most going to look at is they're going to look at your academics.
Mm.
And they are actually looking for reasons to accept you. They're not looking for reasons to deny you. Oh, here's Michelina. Let me find the red flag here. There's something that's going to not... No. They're looking honestly for, make my job easy. Be the one that is going to come here. So do you meet our academic qualifications in the courses that you took and the grades that you received relative to what your school offered? So challenge yourself. Doesn't mean you have to be the most competitive. You know, I mean, there are some students that can support that. There are other students. You know, taking a curriculum without AP is a struggle. So go to your limit.
Right. Yeah, so that's a question that I have. You have a quote on here. I'm often asked if it's better to skip honors and AP courses and earn a 4.0 or take the honors and AP courses and earn a 3.5. My answer to that is it's better to take honors and AP courses and earn a 4.0.
That's right.
This isn't your quote. This is Charles Chicken's.
Yes.
This is Charles Deacon, who's the Dean of Admissions at Georgetown University.
Yes.
Is that true?
That is true.
Yeah.
It is true. So what they're looking for, it's
perfection.
Well, what they're saying is if you've earned a 4.0 but never challenged yourself, and we're a pretty challenging school, Georgetown, are you really going to be able to keep up with the other students here? So what we want to see is that you challenged yourself. If you're going to apply to the likes of us, okay? There are other schools that won't be important.
Mm-hmm.
But for the likes of a Georgetown, an Ivy League, a Stanford, the upper echelon, you need to show that you challenge yourself because every kid that's getting into the school has. And to be in that classroom with that caliber of, you know, classmates.
And AP is the benchmark for challenge?
It could be. Some schools don't offer AP curriculum, mm-hmm. so other schools might offer an IB curriculum, the International Baccalaureate.
Right.
So have you chosen your higher level courses in that? Some schools don't offer either of those, so what are the other opportunities? I work at a school in New York City. I started in September as a volunteer for what was to be 2 months. That was now, I'm going on my 14th year, okay? The 14th year that I'm the college counselor, and I'm the volunteer college counselor. Many folks know this school. It's the school from homeless to Harvard. That's the school that I'm mm-hmm. at. And so these kids, you know, do not have the advantages of nice private high schools. We don't have an AP curriculum. We don't have an IB curriculum. Mm-hmm. They shouldn't be restricted from being able to apply to these, you know, wonderful schools. So we want to see that you challenge yourself within your high school.
Mm-hmm.
And if there are opportunities to take other courses outside that are available to you, which are available to our high school mm-hmm. students, did you do that?
Mm-hmm.
That's what we're looking for.
And it's important that you, it sounds like from this quote, that not only to take the course, but to do well in it.
To do well.
Because
now,
I think that is the challenge, and I think math comes up a lot.
Yes.
You know, where you're trying, you're in this race to, I remember visiting Miss Halls when Michelina was in 7th grade.
Yeah.
And I went to an AP calculus class at
right.
Miss Halls.
Yeah.
There was not a American student in that class
mm.
at that time.
Right.
It was all international students.
Right.
And I had said to the head of school at the time, I said, well, my question is, why is that the case? And she said, because you can't get to AP calculus traditionally in the system unless you start math in 7th grade,
right.
which would be algebra in 7th grade.
Yes.
Because you can't get all the way up there. You run out of time.
That's right.
And so I started thinking about that as strategy, you know, and so I'm wondering, though, you know, I mean, I've kind of pushed Michelina in the whole math thing to be ahead so that she can make it not to AP calculus, but I'm even thinking just calculus.
Right.
So I've really stretched her,
mm-hmm.
you know, out of her comfort zone, and she's not going to get to AP, though, because I didn't start her in 7th grade. I started her in 8th grade.
Right.
So how does that relate into this, and what happens to geometry where she did not score well? Because she honestly wasn't prepared for it.
Yeah.
You know, to change schools and to go to high school. And how much does that affect it?
Yeah. Let me backtrack on one thing about that AP and 4.0.
Mm-hmm.
So they're kind of saying that tongue in cheek, meaning we want you to take more challenging courses and reach as high as you can. Not everybody's going to get a 4.0. Let's just face it. I didn't get a 4.0. I don't know if you got 4.0s.
No,
I don't know that most people do. Okay, it's not the way
yeah.
the world works. But they want to see that you challenged yourself.
Yeah.
And that's what you've done for your daughter so nicely, is that you pushed her. But what they're starting to change, the philosophy is, you know, you'd mentioned, you know, Michelina has an interest in forensic science. Well, we know that there's a math element to that.
Mm-hmm.
So you were smart to push the math and science just to make sure, Michelina, if this is the area you want to go in, you're going to be doing a lot of this.
Mm-hmm.
But if Michelina had said that I want to be a dancer, or Michelina said I want to be a writer someday, Michelina, you know, is a musician, or it wants to be a debater, or wants to go into law or something, I don't know that I would go completely out of my way to push the math and science if she didn't have a passion for it.
Mm-hmm.
I certainly would want her to take those courses and to go, you know, as far as she could, but I don't know that I would necessarily start in 7th grade. But you have a unique situation. You have a daughter who's interested in math and science.
Mm-hmm.
So she's
Well, I just got lucky, I think, in that case.
Well, maybe you did. You know,
I sat in this one class and was like, oh my gosh, she's got to take algebra next year.
Yeah, so you say, when do you start that?
But it is interesting when you're thinking about the competitiveness of it.
Yes.
All, because the international students certainly are something to compete with
yes.
in this platform.
Yes.
And so I think that is something that parents have to be thinking about. And then when do you, you know, when is it, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I think it's, you know, courses and grades and rank and all that stuff.
Yeah.
It's so important at this point in their lives.
Right.
But
right.
it is so meaningless.
Right.
In life itself. And really, does it really relate to college success?
It's a brilliant question. And studies are showing that it doesn't. And so, you want to know a little secret? College admissions is changing that way, too.
Mm-hmm.
There was a study done at Harvard. They spent a couple of years doing this. There was an independent kind of think tank research group that researched this. And they said people were taking courses to take them to show that they were challenging themselves. not because they were passionate about them or that they were going to lead to the areas where they were going to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
So my secret to you is to let you know that actually what College Admissions is looking for is passion.
Mm-hmm.
Can you connect the dots for us? Why did you take the courses that you took? I'll give you an example. You mentioned Stanford earlier. We had two students who were accepted to Stanford this year. And I was like, oh my gosh, what did they do differently?
Right.
And everybody wants to, you know,
work with you now.
Well, maybe work with us, but certainly not the secret.
Since
right?
their acceptance rate was 0%.
Exactly. How did you get the two, you know?
Right.
They were two so different students, but they could so clearly define themselves mm-hmm. in the application process. One was an environmentalist from a very young age. Never had Stanford in her mind at the time that she started doing the things that were very environmentally
mm-hmm.
focused. The courses that she took, you know, many, she tried to exhaust all the environmental courses or things that were science related. Her activities were around things like, you know, Habitat for Humanity and how do you build sustainable, you know, how do you work with sustainable materials and eco-friendly materials.
Mm-hmm.
She looked at other things where she traveled, you know, to simple, you know, trips just in her area to say, how do I study this environment?
Mm-hmm.
Somebody that could really communicate that. And then by the time she got to junior and senior year in high school, she was a true leader in these and left a legacy at her school of her passion for this.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's one that gets into Stanford as your environmentalist. You know, on the other side was another one who was a researcher and a historian, just loved from a very young age to read history. So while everybody else is reading comic books, he's asking mom and dad to read him history books.
Mm-hmm.
And he just always had that. His parents nurtured that. He was smart in other areas, so was she. You know, that both of them to get into Stanford, you'd have to. But he started doing research. He started doing internships and papers, just locally talking to people, going to the universities, see if he could help out a professor as a high school student. And it goes off and writes this beautiful paper for the Concord Review.
Mm.
It's selected, you know, not only for the Concord Review, but at the end, it's selected as one of the three top high school papers for the year.
Mm.
Now, that's a kid that didn't write that for college or university.
Wrote it for himself.
He wrote that for himself.
Mm.
And it was such an interesting study that he put together. But he communicates that to Stanford, and they now have two students,
mm-hmm.
our environmentalist and our historian.
And I think you talked about this the last time I interviewed you, is that, you know, when we were applying to college, the rounded student was what we were taught to be, right? We were
yes.
We were kind of good at a whole bunch of stuff.
And
I mean, I played softball, tennis, the violin.
Yes.
None of them super well,
right?
You know, and I acted,
yeah.
and I was, you know, I was on the legal review board, and I was, you know, working with the mini Girl Scout, you know,
yes.
and so I did. I was never home. I was
right.
constantly doing things.
Right.
You talk now about that depth and breadth that years ago colleges were looking for, creating the freshman class that was going to help them do certain things.
Yes.
In other words, they wanted somebody that was going to come in and be the environmentalist.
Yes.
They want somebody who's going to be a historian.
Yes.
They want somebody who's going to be the, you know, the conductor, you know,
that's
a future
right.
conductor.
Yeah, yearbook
and
editor.
Yearbook editor,
yeah.
right.
Mm-hmm.
So they're looking for the mascot, which is a hot
yeah.
new D1 scholarship now, right?
yes. it wasn't when I was the mascot, but it is now. Yes, exactly.
Now it's like that.
Yeah.
The newest way to get a D1 scholarship,
yeah.
the mascot. And that's authenticity, right?
Yes,
that's
yes.
looking at these kids who this is really what they want to do.
Yes. Yeah, so what we do with our students, just so that you know, to really kind of, you know, take that idea of what you're talking about a step further, we always tell all of our families and our clients, our goal, at the end we understand it's all about college and you hired a college counselor, I mean, obviously college is going to work into this. What we're really talking about with our students is a fulfilling high school experience.
Mm-hmm.
How do you exit this high school saying, I did everything I wanted to do?
Right.
And the problem is that when you spread yourself too thin,
mm.
trying to be the well-rounded student, the challenge is, did you ever absorb any of it enough?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a sampler. I just kept sampling things. But, you know, if we really are passionate about things like the environmentalist, I want to start my own club someday. Or I want to be the leader of that
mm-hmm.
club. I want to show my leadership in that. Now, I can tell you that student did many things outside of environment, too. You know,
mm-hmm.
it wasn't just environmental activities.
Mm-hmm.
But the environment really inspired and really drove most of what she did. Same with the historian. He did many things. He's an accomplished squash player. You know, I mean, in a very competitive
life. So they weren't slugs, these kids.
They weren't slugs. No, they weren't slugs, but they also weren't so one-dimensional. None of us are.
Right.
You know what
right.
I mean? I hope they
but
were
I
more
think there
multifaceted
does,
than that.
I think there does speak to this idea of, you know, and I had the fortune of interviewing you when Michelina was very little, you know, I think 4 or 5 the first time we met. And it does speak to trying to figure out what their passion is, you know, and what really is driving them to think about this connectivity to the success of college.
Yes.
The gentleman, the admissions counselor that we met, that Michelina was on the list, he said, I said, what's your number one word of advice for looking at colleges? And he said, retention. That's what I would look at if I were you.
Yes.
How many freshmen came back second year?
Yes.
Because that means that those colleges are picking kids that are invested not only in their curriculum, but in that school.
Yes.
It's the right place for them because they're coming back another year.
Yes.
And he said, you can look at retention rate all the way up through the full 4 years.
Yes.
And he said, and that's what I would look at.
It's a great piece of advice because it says two things. It says the one that he said, it says, you know, how invested they are in my school.
Mm.
But it says the second thing, how successful they'll be.
Right.
I can bring you in, and you may be very invested in my school, but you simply can't keep up with the classroom with the other students. And so you got in the door, but unfortunately you're never going to get out any other way but to have to leave.
Mm.
And you don't want that either. So what I always say to students when we're looking at the retention rate is, two things are happening here. They know what they're doing.
Right.
They're finding kids are going to be successful here, but also happy here.
Yeah.
You're not going to want to leave.
And the college, and I think you even said it, is that this is big business for college. They want you back.
They want you back.
Right. When they've invested in you, they want you back. And
yes.
So this is something that they've worked very hard on.
Yes.
And conversely, for those seniors that are applying right now,
yes.
is when you get rejected, which is so difficult because
yes.
I told you we were on the other side of that
yes.
with Michelina's friend who was just... Both of them, one rejection after another, it becomes
yeah.
so demeaning.
Yes.
And I kept saying to them, it's not the right place for you.
Right.
It's not the right place for you. They're doing you a favor. They're not rejecting you. They're telling you that this isn't going to work for you.
We tell our students that we don't even use that word rejection. Because
right.
rejection implies bad.
Yeah,
and so
it does.
What we do
it does,
is we say denied. You know,
mm-hmm.
and denied, we can get denied, you know, I mean, you can ask somebody out for a date and they just say no. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with you or them. It just means no for any host of reasons.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, do you want chocolate ice cream or vanilla? You choose one or the other. But I will tell you that it is devastating. And I'm glad that you brought that up because one of the things that is really difficult for parents is when their wishes for their kids overrides what their kid wants to do.
Mm.
And it becomes more important for them for any number of reasons. Bragging rights in the community, you know. The car sticker, the bumper sticker, that's exactly right. The trophy case, as we call it.
Yeah,
you know?
Right. I feel like it's the car sticker. I remember one time my mother had said to me before she died, she's like, put the Georgetown sticker on your car now. Nobody's going to know. Nobody's going to know.
Yeah, exactly. But isn't there something in that, right?
Yeah, right?
And so sometimes you have to say, now I can tell you there are kids that go off to their schools and they're very, very proud.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'll put down, you know, Podunk U on their car, even though mom and dad may not want it. They'll go, but I love my school.
Right.
Why can't I be on there? I'm proud of it, you know? So I always tell parents, you know, be careful that your desires for your kid don't overshadow. I mean, all of us as adults, aren't we all trying to adjust to who we really are and how much is driven by outside forces that
sure,
had
sure.
nothing to do with our desires or passions?
Right.
Listen to your kids. They'll tell you what they want to do and where they want to go.
Mm, that's true. All right, we are out of time, but you had a third, which is building strong recommendations.
Yes.
So for those... Everybody is to really be working on recommendations all throughout the process?
Well, certainly your junior year,
mm-hmm.
you're going to be asked to submit one or two teacher recommendations, mostly to build strong relationships with two teachers, both inside and outside the classroom. Go to their visiting hours, you know, talk to them about the coursework. Let them know about the personal things that you're doing so
mm-hmm.
they get to know you that way, too. And at the end of junior year, choose two of them that you feel the most comfortable with to write your letters of recommendation.
Well, we are out of time. To get more information about Bill, visit his website, which is
www.theshortlist.org.
Theshortlist.org. And I can't thank you enough. We're going to come back in another show.
Thank you.
And we're going to do the radical change in the redesigned SAT.
Yes.
So confusing.
Yes, it is.
One word of advice is, how many times do you think somebody should really even take an SAT?
You know what? I mean, they're looking at that more and more. Don't take it more than three. And if you can get away with two, even better. The first time is your test. You're just trying it out.
Yeah,
and then you learn from that. And then hopefully you do some prep and you take it a second. You're done. But if not, three should be the most.
All right. So that's a little teaser for the next time when we come back and
there
really delve into SAT, ACT, times, prep, blah, 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 all that stuff, which is a whole other hour.
Yes. Well, thank you.
To learn more about Bill, go to his website, which is theshortlist.org, theshortlist.org. Thank you so much for coming on Radio to Women. I love talking to you.
Thank you.
One of my favorites.
I love coming here. Thank you.
It goes so fast. You're one of my favorites. And I look forward to next time. As always, thank you. Bye-bye.
Thank you.